I really liked when you said that thing about the distinction between high skill and low skill. You don't really like it. I really like when you say that, because a lot of people just throw those words around, and those words, I wonder if that framing itself just helps to propagate certain kind of behaviors and thinking.
I know someone that tells, you know, a really neat story of visiting a hospital, and you know, there was a janitor mopping the floor. And this person said, like, hey, you know, like, what do you do here in the hospital? And she said, well, I am here saving lives, because it is important to have clean floors to avoid, you know, like, so like, would you say that this person was doing nothing? No, she was doing an absolutely critical job keeping that hospital clean. So then there wouldn't be, you know, infections and things happening. But it's how we frame it. It's how we think about people. If we think that because you are mopping a floor or you're picking apples or working in a greenhouse or in a, you know, meat processing or making beds in a hotel, that somehow you are less important, I think then we have a problem. So I think, yeah, again, like I think skills are skills, and our economy needs absolutely all of them.
Welcome back to the Newcomers Podcast, people, where I explore what it means to be an immigrant to immigrants like myself. Today, I'm talking with Diana Palmerin Velasco, who just told me that in Mexico, like, literally everyone by law has to have two last names, which is really interesting to me. But we're not talking about last names today. We're talking about business immigration. You know, she works with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, and we're talking about the future of work and all those sort of things. But I think I want to kind of kick off, Diana, with, you know, I came across something you said somewhere where you talked about it took you 2 years to kind of get a job in Canada. You talked about you had a UK's master's degree, you could speak English. And I'm just like, when you think back to that time and you think back to now, do you think much has changed? Do you think we're doing the things we should do to kind of change those kind of things from happening? Where we bring in people who have talent, fit the system, but then they come to the system itself, and then it just feels like the system has no place for them, or they have to kind of do double the work to kind of find their place within the system.
Yeah, I came in 2011, yeah. And like you said, you know, prior to that, I had lived in the UK for 5 years. So I thought, well, you know, I speak English, I have experience from the UK, like that should count for something. Yeah. So I guess in a way I was naive, because the reality is that when I came to Canada in 2011, and I came, you know, as an economic migrant selected for the skills that I had, I thought it was going to be easy. And at that time, those years I had just finished my PhD. So I was trying to get into the academic sector, and that is very, very difficult, even, you know, for Canadian-born individuals. So I did kind of like try that path for a year, but then I thought, you know what, like this is going to be incredibly hard. So I might as well pivot and try to get in, you know, most of my experience at that time had been in the not-for-profit sector. So but surprise, surprise, I was sending, you know, lots of applications and resumes and cover letters. And I can assure you, they didn't have typos. They were written in good English, and not a single call. I wasn't getting a single interview. So it becomes a very, I mean, I guess all immigrants, we know is we're not expecting things to be smooth and things to be easy. But yeah. At the same time, I don't think we are expecting them to be so rough and so difficult. And then, you know, of course, like the first rejections and people tell you, you know, don't take anything personal. But at some point, that becomes really, really hard. So then you start thinking, well, you know, there's something wrong with me. And I have to say as well that I, you know, after 6 months of not going anywhere, I did go to kind of like the immigrant serving organizations that provide employment services. And at that time, Dosi, there was not much that they could do for something like for someone like me. They would ask, what kind of job are you looking for? What are your credentials? And I would tell them, and they would say, well, you know, like, we have a job fair happening at the end of the month, but it is not in, you know, kind of like the sectors you're interested. There are entry-level jobs. So the reality is that at that time, again, going back to 2011, I didn't find them helpful. I didn't think they would offer me to, you know, teach me how to write a resume. I already knew how to write a resume. They would offer to kind of like mock interviews. Well, I already knew how to interview. So yeah, that was very discouraging. Eventually, I did find my first job in Canada through someone that I knew, and this I told this person, you know, I applied for this position, and it turned out that person knew someone in that place and just basically sent an email saying, like, hey, have a look at the application of this person. And then they did have a look at my application and they called me for an interview, and then that was the way I found my first job. So, but yes, it took me 2 years. Now, that was almost 15 years ago. And I am not sure how things have changed or not. I do have the feeling that they, even if they have changed, that change is not enough. And I see a lot of people still struggling. You know, when I came in 2011, the engineers and the architects and the doctors and the nurses that were, you know, driving taxis.
That still happens.
Well, now you find them delivering, you know, meals and driving Uber and skip the dishes. And, you know, there's nothing wrong, of course, with these jobs. But I think, you know, we really are underutilizing talent in a very, you know, it doesn't make sense for anyone. It doesn't make sense for the country, and it doesn't make sense for the individuals that have invested a lot of, you know, resources, financial and emotional, and, you know, bringing families and having certain expectations, and then landing here and realizing that it is incredibly, incredibly difficult. So, I don't think we have done enough to address that.
Honestly, like, you know, I remember someone once said on the podcast that we need to stop. I think part of the issue for me is that we need to stop glorifying resilience. So people will say to you, you spent 2 years trying to get a job, you are resilient, you know, and they just kind of glorify that struggle. And the lady, she's Anam Zakaria, she runs KISA, there's a storytelling organization. She's like, we should stop glorifying the immigrants' resilience. Like, it's like, you see, like, you're right, is that we do know it's going to be hard, like, because you're starting life afresh. But should it be that hard? You know, that's the question that I want us to, I'm hoping that we can answer. One thing that I'm curious about is when you mentioned two things, which I found interesting, which is that I don't need them. Like, they say, can I get help with my resume or interview skills? And you already have those skill sets. But I want to challenge you a bit here in the sense that, so I had this really interesting conversation with a recruiter, and he goes, like, yeah, he was of the opinion, his own opinion was that, well, yeah, but usually one has to spend some time readjusting their CV to fit the Canadian style, and one has to spend some time just kind of understanding how wordings and phrasings are said in Canada, so that way you can settle in. So the question I'm probably asking here is are we doing enough of that as immigrants, that sometimes, so we come in and we are skilled and all that stuff, and so we kind of know that we have the skill set, but then there's the process of adaptation. Are we doing enough of that? That's one. Two, the second part of that is, are the settlement organizations doing that process, or maybe how are they selling that thing? Because are you selling it as, okay, I need to help you make sure your CV fits? or I need to teach you how to write a CV? Because I feel like there are two different things. And I wonder if that's what you experienced then. Because there's something we're saying, oh, Diana, hi, you're very experienced. Okay, let's see how we can make this CV fit the Canadian context. Or, hey, Diana, let me help you write your CV. Like, that's those are two different things. And I feel like it gets all mixed up in the conversation. What do you think you experienced then? Or what do you think is happening? Just a question, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like in these kind of situations, like I think it goes both ways. Like for us as immigrants, yes, I do believe there is a responsibility to learn, you know, how things work in the employment world of the country where you're landing, you know, kind of like workplace, you know, kind of like unwritten rules, the importance of a strong handshake, exactly, and eye contact, and being punctual. Like all of those things, I think it is on us to do our research and make sure that we present well in the workplace. I also think, you know, that the organizations, particularly those that provide employment services to newcomers, at least in my case, at that time in 2011, they seem very limited to kind of like serving, you know, kind of like one type of a newcomer when there are many types.
Yeah.
When I came, you know, like kind of like my confidence in, you know, my resume writing or my interview skills were mainly because I have had experience of working in the UK. I have been living in the UK for 5 years. I worked in the UK. The UK is not that different from Canada. Perhaps if I have come kind of like straight, you know, Mexico, Canada, I would have been like, okay, I might need a little bit more coaching with this. But I was feeling confident, and it's not the confidence. It's just that there wasn't any real value in the support those organizations could offer to me. Like when they look at my resume, they were like, what do we do with this person? Because they were very limited, as I said, to providing support for kind of like one type of newcomer that perhaps does not know how to like really write a resume or how to, but there was no one that could sit with me and say, you know, like, let's have a look at your resume. Let's explore, you know, it's not just universities or colleges. It could also be NGOs or it could also be local government. Mm-hmm. Or I have a contact that, you know, perhaps you can call and just go for coffee. Like, no, there was none of that. It was like, you know, this is not kind of like the newcomer I am used to serving. So then I have nothing to say other than, you know, maybe come to our job fair at the end of the month for a job that you never in your life thought you were going to have and that you don't want, actually. I'm sorry, Dulcie, but it's how it felt.
Yeah, it's okay because I hear this a lot. And, you know, there's this thing, it's such an uncomfortable conversation, especially for the settlement agencies, because I think they're doing a great job. But I think there's just this thing about where it feels like everything is just boxed into one thing. Like, and I can understand. I think I understand to some extent. Oh, no, maybe the word is, yes, I think I understand. Because I'm like, okay, I kind of get you. It's like I kind of get what you all are trying to do. It's like, okay, there's a ton of people to serve. If we make it into simple, neat boxes, things move much faster. However, there's also the fact that Canada brings in different kinds of immigrants. And so can't we design our settlement program to speak to those different kinds of immigrants? Because then you have a lot of people who you're talking to them and you listen to them and you just know, obviously, they don't fit into the usual settlement thing. Like, so for example, it happened to me too. When I moved here, I landed. A friend says, oh, you know, you should register with the settlement agency. I reach out to them. The first conversation I had with them, I just told my wife, I'm not going to talk to these people anymore. Like, I did not respond. I just told her, I am just going to go on LinkedIn and find people that work in my field and have conversations with them. And I'll learn more about those things. I found a CV service. I paid them for my to them to look at my CV and redo my CV. I'm like, okay, my CV is done right now. And then so I've always had this theory in my head. I said to myself, okay, I'm going to start talking to people. By the time I talk to people for a couple, I start to get a sense of how they do things here just by having normal conversations. And so I did that. Like, I mean, I was doing that before I moved here. But when I came here, I kept on doing that. And then you start to get a sense of, okay, this is how they interview. This is what they expect from me. Because I agree with you. One call with the settlement agency, I'm like, nah, I can't do this. It's not working, you know. I'm just kind of moving it on. Is there something you said again in previous, because I went through a couple of your interviews, something you said which I found interesting, where you said those 2 years where you are job hunting, where you lost, but you Canada also lost as well. And I think that's such a profound way to put the things, the way our immigration system is currently set up. It's like, these are not just numbers passing through that thing. These are humans passing through that. And even if we say that the human beings have lost part of their lives in the process, the country also lost those years, because those could have been productive years, which these people would have put back value into the country.
Yeah, for me, those 2 years were very difficult. As I said, there were periods of time where I truly thought, you know, I'm never going to make it. This was the worst decision of my life. I should have stayed in Mexico. And then kind of like doubting the self-confidence of, do I actually have something to offer? Yeah. So those are very difficult things. I mean, in my case, because I also came with my partner, so I guess I was very lucky that kind of like, and he's an engineer and he didn't have any issues. So at least, you know, economically, there wasn't a sense of urgency. Otherwise, I would have had to take on jobs that were not kind of like my preferred choices and that didn't align with my education or my expectations. But yes, I also think Canada lost, because those were 2 years where I was not paying taxes. I was one of those people. I am one of those people that love working. Like, for me, work gives purpose to my life. It forces me to get out of bed. Like, I want to feel productive. But it also has, you know, I could have been paying taxes and I wasn't.
Yeah.
So I think definitely Canada lost. And just wanting to go back to something, because I think it is very important, that, you know, at the end of the day, like you said, it's not numbers. Each of us are individuals, particularly with newcomers and immigrants. Yes, we do share some experiences, but we are not the same. And I find that still in 2025, at the end of almost 2025, you don't know, though, see how many conversations I have where people are kind of like, okay, all immigrants are the same. There's this idea in the collective mind of, you know, all of us coming from completely desperate, without a penny in the pocket, with not great English or French. And you know, there's huge diversity. And again, you know, particularly for those that come under the economic class, that get selected for the experience. And you're talking about people that have experience, not only in their home countries, many of them have been very mobile. So they have had experience in London and Paris and Dubai. And then, you know, like coming here and like, so we need to be, even, you know, with refugees or asylum claimants, there's a huge diversity there. Not, you know, like I think, like I really struggle when people make these assumptions about what someone is and what someone can offer, because the reality is that there's a whole spectrum. Even, you know, family reunification is one of those categories. Like when we look at immigration, you look at the economic class, and then you look at humanitarian, and you look at family reunification. I often find myself as well in conversations where, you know, at least from the economic business perspective, people are only thinking about those that came under the economic class. But I always say, well, you know, the families, like the spouses that come, many of them want to work. They have very valuable skills under humanitarian grounds. the same thing, you know, like you might enter the country as a refugee, but that doesn't mean you don't have skills. That doesn't mean you don't want to work. So why we don't think about the whole diversity within the newcomer immigrant population?
I wrote this article some last week where I said we have what I call class one and class two problems, which is it's a theory, it's a framework.
I read it. I have to say I read it.
Thank you. You know, and I just like it feels like we're just going through. We rarely, sometimes you just have one problem, but we have the two problems hidden at the same time. And class one problems for me are easy to solve somehow if we want to solve them. The bigger one are the class two problems, you know, and it feels like we've just ignored that completely. Like, we're just like, you know what? At some point, we'll come there. Because, you know, when you say the collective, there's even just that collective conversation where do people actually even know what the Canadian immigration system is like? If you are Canadian born, like, what happens in the immigration system? Or, you know, because sometimes you talk to some people, like every now and then I say to people, because I have this theory in my head where I say, when someone is coming at me, I just say, you know what, let's have a conversation. So I say to people, let's talk. You know, would you be able to talk about this? And more often than not, is after someone, the person has made a statement about, oh, no, a blanket statement about immigrants. They're like, oh, no, they don't have a conversation. I'm like, then how do we learn about each other if you're not willing to have a conversation about this? You know? But I don't want to dwell too much on Canada's on those kind of issues. The other thing I want to talk about a bit with you is business immigration. I have a friend of mine. His name is Blaine Kumar, who believes that his thought is that we're not even doing anything there. Honestly, for example, people talk about the startup visa. It's not even a conversation right now. And so because we talk, we want to increase productivity, we want to attract entrepreneurs, we want to attract investors. But I feel like you're in the space where you're hearing a lot of these conversations regularly, you're in those conversations. And it's like, where's the disconnect, honestly, in your opinion? Like, why do we have that disconnect between the kind of country we want, the kind of ecosystem we need to build to get that kind of country we want, and our immigration programs? Because it just feels like it's scattered. What is happening, people?
For sure. I think there's a massive disconnect. I think, like, in a way, you know, Canada is a country that has been built on immigration. And I think, in a way, we have taken for granted that people will always want to come here, no matter what. I don't think we have really anchored, and of course the times change. I mean, we cannot talk about the immigration of today and expect that it is the same that it was in the 1950s or the 1960s. Yeah. And something along those lines, going back to our previous conversation on the settlement sector, is that settlement sector still very much functions for an immigration of 30 years ago, not the one that we have today. So I think that is one thing. I would say for me, you know, the success really of immigration is that it has to be strongly anchored in the economy. And why I say this is because that is the way that you are going to keep the absolutely critical public support from Canadians to then make it work for the people that you are bringing to this country. But if Canadians do not see or do not have clarity on how immigration is being beneficial for them, then you start getting into trouble. And right now we have a very concerning situation here because Canada had been exceptional, you know, kind of like the poster child of the world in terms of its, you know, welcoming and generous attitude towards immigration. But that has changed drastically in the past 2 years. And right now we find ourselves in a situation where I think some of the surveys that I have seen is that 6 in 10 Canadians think there are too many immigrants.
Yeah.
Many Canadians are thinking that immigrants, and this is unjustified and is not the reality. However, the dominant perception is that big numbers of immigration have caused problems in housing, in healthcare, in education. So, you know, some people would say perception is reality.
Oh, yeah.
And we
need
to pay attention. We need to pay attention to that. So I think we are in a moment where we really need to take a critical look and go back to your class one and class two problems. I'm not saying everything is terrible. There are things at work.
Yeah.
And then look at the context in which we live and the kind of country that we want to build.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's not that we only need one type of immigrant. It's not that we only need entrepreneurs or that we only need, you know, highly skilled people with PhDs and all of that. Yes, we need them, but we also need entrepreneurs. But we also need, you know, what is, I don't like this term, but that is a term that is used, the lower skill immigration. Mm. Because, you know, agriculture, I mean, the food security, it's so important. And the reality is that we do not have a domestic population that is interested in certain types of jobs. So I think, you know, when we talk about immigration, we need to be really comprehensive about what is it that we're talking about and recognize that we need all of them. We need permanent immigration, but there's also a need for temporary immigration. Other countries in the world, peer countries like Australia and the UK, are doing it. So there's nothing, I don't think there's anything shameful as long as we are clear and people are clear on what to expect. But right now, the situation does look a little bit messy. And I think part of the problem is, one, our immigration policy is not strongly anchored in our economic needs. Number two, and of course, working for the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, I will have to say, businesses, they are the ones that, you know, that drive the economy, that create the jobs, that know the kind of like skills and talents that they need to be better engaged, and they need to be at the table. The other one, of course, is a recognition that, you know, Canada is a country of many economies. We cannot continue, I don't think it serves anyone well, to continue having this concentration of immigration in Toronto, in Montreal, and in Vancouver. Like, there is a saturation there. We need to be able to sell the whole of Canada.
Yeah.
I just come, you know, last weekend we had our AGM and convention, and talking to some of the chambers in the north, in the Northwest Territories and in the Yukon. And, you know, they are desperate, absolutely desperate for people. But I don't think we do a good job of, you know, presenting those opportunities to people that are thinking about coming to Canada. So I think we really need to rethink how we are doing it. I think we really need to bring, you know, Canadians on board to show them that this is beneficial for everyone. It's beneficial for the country, it's beneficial for Canadians, it's beneficial for newcomers. So, but right now it seems a little bit challenging.
Yeah. And you raised a lot of really good points. You know, I have a couple of follow-up questions for you. I think the first one is a more direct term, which is, How is the chamber trying to help with kind of helping, one, getting business to get more better engaged? Because I do think that there's just, it feels like there's that thing where businesses themselves, I mean, they kind of know we need immigrants, yes. There's the immigrant conversation, yes. But it just feels like the immigration conversation is more being had by immigration consultants, immigration media, and the politicians, and just feels like the business community itself is not exactly a big part of that conversation. Like, I mean, there are a couple of people who have some great posts out there. There's Aline Dickinson or so. She talks really good, makes really great points. Like, I absolutely love that lady. There are a couple of other people also who kind of share things, but it just feels like the business world is very, very disconnected from all this. And I feel like that is also part of why we have this thing where, like, you're right, because once you do public support, like, we can say all the good things we want about immigration, if the public says we don't like it, we all know politicians will always pander to their base. It's just politicians will politic. It's an unfortunate reality of the world of politics. They will politic. And so I think the first follow-up question is, What is the chamber doing to kind of help, to kind of help bridge that gap, you know, and just get more businesses involved in this conversation?
Yeah, so, you know, the Canadian Chamber has always been very supportive of immigration because we know it is a key driver of economic growth. We know there's a massive business case for it. You know, of course, immigrants are not only, you know, workers, they're also consumers. Those are very, very important things. I would say, you know, like we here at the Chamber, traditionally, we have our National Workforce Strategies Committee that would be kind of like reviewing things related to immigration, mainly as a workforce strategy. But things have changed now. So again, like in recognition of the challenging context where we find ourselves, we think there needs to be a stronger business voice, kind of like, you know, resetting the conversation around immigration. So we are launching for the first time an immigration council. So councils are groups of business leaders from all sectors, from all regions of the country that are very, very active in advocating for certain objectives. So in the case of immigration, like right now, as I said, you know, we think is really needed that we have that business representation saying like, hey, wait a second, immigration is incredibly important for the economy. And hey, wait a second, look at the facts. We are not in any way advocating for, you know, massive numbers. This is something that you and I have discussed before. It's not numbers for the sake of numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
We agree with the Prime Minister and the new government that immigration has to be sustainable. So, and what does that mean? Is making sure that communities and regions in the country can successfully integrate newcomers. Mm-hmm. Because we cannot be responsible and say, you know, it doesn't matter, there's no houses, we cannot do that. So again, we're not arguing for bigger numbers. We are not advocating for we need to anchor it in the needs of the economy. We need to look at specific regions and the needs of the economies that are there. We need to make sure that, you know, people are able to access as soon as possible employment opportunities, meaningful employment opportunities. So they don't have to spend the 2 years that I spent not working, but that within the you know, 3 months of landing, they're able to access a meaningful opportunity. So that's what we're doing. I mean, of course, the government every year, as they prepare for the immigration levels, there's an open consultation that anyone can submit to IRCC. We always do that. But I think that is not enough. That is not enough. We certainly need to be very proactive in making sure that the government understands what are the needs of employers. And also, I think sometimes people think, and there has been such bad media around it, but the reality is that there are thousands and thousands of employers, Dosi, that are incredibly committed. They are responsible employers that care about their employees, that are also right now very concerned about all the changes that have taken place in the past 2 years, because, you know, like they want to do everything they can to help a worker they have had for 2 years and perhaps their work permit is expiring. And employers are equally invested in, they want to keep this worker. But this is something that I don't think it gets too much out there in the media. These other phase of how employers are committed to making sure that this works.
I feel like we need to do more of that, or find ways to do more of that, because or else it just starts to feel like it's just people in immigration talking about immigration, you know, that kind of thing. And then so the public looks at it and goes like, oh, well, you all have a stake in it, so we don't believe you, you know. And it's good to hear that there's the businesses who are doing that. I think the other thing, I'm just curious to know, do you think part of the problems you're facing is the framing? You know, I really liked when you said when you said that thing about the distinction between high skill and low skill, like, you don't really like it. I really like when you say that, because a lot of people just throw those words around, and those words, I wonder if that framing itself just helps to propagate certain kind of behaviors and thinking. Because when you frame things as low skill and high skill, then people go like, oh yeah, we don't need low skill. What is a low skill? You know, and then, you know, people just say things about low skill, because low skill in itself as a framing has certain connotations about it, even if you come at it with a pure heart. You're like, oh yeah, I meant good things when I said low skill. But there's someone's going to hear you say that and just think, well, low skill means that we don't really need that. You know, I wonder if it's just a function of a framing thing, and if the chamber can help with that. Because I feel like a lot of our categorizations don't make sense anymore. Honestly, I'm being probably harsh here to the immigration system, but those categorizations we have, they don't make sense. Like, so low skill, high skill, what does that mean? Like, what does the country need at this point in time? If the country needs people to pick, people in the farm to pick stuff, that's a certain kind of skill. That's a skill we need. And so we hire that, and not say, oh, that's a low skill job. And then someone goes on the gripe and says, oh, it's the hiring low skill jobs that anyone can do. And then you start seeing statements like, we're getting third worlders, just start getting irritating statements. And I'm just like, I wonder if what are your thoughts on that? Because I feel like I struggle with that framing a lot, because I see it thrown around by people just carelessly. You're just, oh, we need high. I'm like, let's be careful here what a high skill job is and a low skill job is. Like, everyone has a part to play in the economy.
Yeah, exactly what you're saying. I think, you know, we all have skills and they are equally important, if you ask me. So, but that is the irony that we have in Canada, and that is a mismatch that we have had for a number of years. So our system, particularly when we talk about the economic class, you know, prioritizes people that are highly educated. People that went to college or university, they have a degree. If you get a master's degree,
you're better.
Extra points. If you get a PhD, extra points. If you speak both languages, extra points. So we have been like, they get, you know, prioritized.
Yeah.
Which is great, because, you know, people would say, those are the ones that we need to enhance human capital and blah, blah, blah. which is, we need them, though. See, like, I'm not saying we don't. Low skilled refers to, you know, lower levels of education. Yeah. But actually, when you look at the job vacancies that we have in the country, that right now are around close to 500,000, so that's 500,000. That is not nothing. 2 years ago, I think, I'm not sure about the dates, but not so long ago, Stats Can actually release a report looking at what were the educational requirements of the vacancies that we had open. And big surprise, most of them actually do not require a master's degree or a PhD. They require a high school diploma, or in some cases, not even that. So this is kind of like the paradox that I think we have been facing, and I think is difficult to process. We cannot expect newcomers that have invested years and years of their life and their resources attending college and university and getting a master's, and then once they land in Canada looking for, you know, an employment opportunity, those are, you know, just they just don't match like what people are expecting. So, and again, like, I think our economy needs absolutely everyone. I know someone that tells, you know, a really neat story of visiting a hospital. And, you know, there was a janitor mopping the floor. And this person said, like, hey, you know, like, what do you do here in the hospital? And she said, well, I am here saving lives. Because it is important to have clean floors.
Clean floors. Oh, I love that.
You know, like, so, like, like, would you say that this person was doing nothing? No, she was doing an absolutely critical job keeping that hospital clean. So then there wouldn't be, you know, infections and things happening. But it's how we frame it. It's how we think about people. If we think that because you are mopping a floor or you are picking apples, or working in a greenhouse or in a, you know, meat processing or making beds in a hotel, that somehow you are less important, I think then we have a problem. So I think, again, like I don't, I think skills are skills and our economy needs absolutely all of them.
Yeah, that's a really neat story, honestly. That's a really good story to tell. Because, yeah, it's right. You're right. Like, if the floor is not clean, then patients die of some virus or something. So everyone is important, you know. Talking about, just kind of building on that, is if you think about, like, if you were in the room now with the Ministry of Immigration, the Ministry of Science, all these folks who deal with all these things, What's the one thing you would ask that we all, that they make the mindset shift we kind of need, that kind of helps improve our immigration system, deal with some of these issues we are facing right now, and kind of get the public back on the side of immigration?
Yeah, I mean, I before I answer, I have to say, you know, these are complex issues. Like, you know,
agreed.
We have very, very, very capable, you know, government officials. And it's not like, there are no easy answers. This is a complex issue. I know they are looking at absolutely everything to make it work, but there's a recognition of complexity. So I don't think, you know, anyone that kind of is like, okay, yeah, the answer is this.
Yeah.
I would be a little bit cautious because there are no simple answers. I would say, you know, in addition to what we have been talking about, like really rethinking if the system we have is right now serving the country and serving the people that, you know, invest everything they have in coming here. I think there has to be a critical look. And like you said, going back to your problems that, you know, really like, looking at what works, what doesn't. I would say, you know, from my perspective, and again, this is very linked to, we have to recover the public trust and support of Canadians towards immigration. That is number one. If we don't, it's going to be incredibly challenging. It's not going to be fair for the people that come to communities across the country and they don't feel that they are welcomed. They don't feel that they are valued. So that's why I think a critical piece is to, again, recover the trust that has been lost. Because then we can all work together to make it better.
Yeah.
Number two, I would say the critical aspect to recover that trust is to show how the economic benefits of immigration benefit all of us. Absolutely all of us. Perhaps think about a restaurant where, you know, in the kitchen, you might have the cook. The cook is an immigrant. But then you have the you know, the waiters and the waitresses, they're Canadians.
Yeah.
Imagine if there wasn't a cook cooking food, then those Canadians would not have the jobs waitressing. So we need to think about how we complement, you know, immigrants. Again, like there's this narrative that they come and take jobs. We really need to be critical of that because you and I know that that is not true.
Exactly.
But there are many Canadians that actually go like, oh, yeah, maybe. So we need to highlight how, and we need to make sure that actually immigration is benefiting everyone, is benefiting the communities, is benefiting the provinces, is benefiting, you know, the whole country, not just a few regions. So for that, I think to happen, we really need to have a system that, again, is anchored in the economy. I think, of course, provinces and territories have to be at the forefront of immigrant attraction, selection and retention. We know that retention aspect is right now kind of like, you know, many question marks around it. There are starting to be studies of immigrants that within the first 5 years of landing in Canada are choosing to leave.
Yeah.
And again, that's another case of they lost, Canada lost.
Yeah.
The global war for talent is very real. So, you know, if we do not get our house in order, then someone else will. And people around the world are not just looking at Canada. They are looking at many other countries that are actually putting on all the work that is needed to present themselves as, you know, this is a place where you're going to make it from day one.
Yeah.
Not in 10 years, not in maybe never. Right?
That's the sad one, actually. But I mean, well, thanks for that reminder about how complex these issues are. Because, yeah, it's so easy to kind of think that it's just wave one wand and everything just kind of fixes itself. But I agree, they're very complex, they're very layered. We're dealing with issues that have built, they're stacked upon other issues and political will and human incentives and just a ton of stuff. But I think you do make a good point about probably the most important thing is winning back the public trust. Because if an immigrant moves into the town today and doesn't feel welcomed, I mean, like, it just spirals from there. What we now start forming is ethnic conclaves because we don't feel welcome. So we all go into our own shells.
Yeah.
And then we have worse integration issues. And, you know, everything just kind of just keeps getting bad and bad and bad until it just falls apart. And that's a really good point, honestly. There's something you said, which I want to kind of go back to, where you, because as you talked about this easy, complex things, but something you talked about earlier about the immigration to the big cities and leaving out the small cities and all that. And is there anything that the chamber is doing to kind of help with this, especially the smaller provinces and territories? Because there's this report I read called Fast and Slow, Fast versus Slow. I think it's by the CD Howe Institute about how there are cities in Canada that are going to die out in time just simply because they don't have enough people. And it's kind of linked to what you were saying earlier on about there's some smaller places where people rather go to Toronto than go to those places because they feel there's more jobs in Toronto than those places. And are there any low-hanging fruits that you all have seen with the work with your chambers and those chamber spots over there to kind of help to get those places kind of a bit more present in the eyes of people who are saying, I want to move to Canada and I want to move to Yukon, not I want to move to Toronto, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes a lot of people coming together. Mm-hmm. I have always thought that actually, you know, if you really want to see the success of immigration, like at the, you know, kind of like the, you see that in the local community level.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I am based in Ottawa, here from Ottawa. You know, you have the federal government, you have the minister, you have IRCC, but actually, you know, it is the experience of the people in local communities. So I think that's something that we need to keep in mind. Something interesting about the Canadian Chamber of Commerce is that we represent, you know, more than 300 chambers and boards of trade across the country. And that's what we call the Canadian Chamber Network. And, you know, they are in every corner of this country and they are embedded in local communities. And they are very active in this space. Immigration, it is a priority for the Canadian Chamber Network. And why I tell you this? Because I am in constant communication with them. You know, there have been a lot of concerns around, as I said before, the impacts that, you know, the policy changes we have seen in the past 2 years around international students, changes to postgraduate work permits, the temporary foreign worker program, cuts to provincial nominee programs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they are very concerned about what those changes mean for their local communities, what it means from their members that are usually small and medium-sized businesses that are at risk of losing employees, that they don't want to lose. So we are in constant communication. And what we do is that every chance that we have, you know, to meet with government officials is to say, you know, I was hearing from chambers, from Alberta, from Saskatchewan, from Manitoba, from Whitehorse. So this is not an isolated case. Like, there are regions out there in our country that are really, really struggling. There's just not enough people in the community. to take on the jobs that they have. And if we think about, you know, if we don't do anything, well, then these communities will die out. You know, the school, suddenly think about a school that suddenly doesn't have enough students because there are not enough children there. And, you know, a reality of the country is that we have an aging population. There are some communities. So again, talking about how they complement each other, you know, what are the teachers of those schools going to do the day when there are not enough students? Yeah. So, I guess so. Yeah, they will need to find a school where there are students. So we do try to, and as I said, immigration is a priority issue for many chambers of commerce across the country. They are very well connected, and they actually, some of them have really fantastic partnerships with, you know, settlement organizations, for example. So, you know, how can we match newcomers with employment opportunities? Some of them are very active with their local municipal governments. And, you know, like there is a lot of work that takes place, I think, at that community level. Something that we, the Canadian Chamber, are doing is, you know, of course, like listening and conveying their concerns every chance that we have. But we are also saying provinces and territories do have to be at the forefront of these conversations, because they are better positioned to understand their local labor market needs, and making sure that all regions, you know, get to benefit from immigration, and it's not just three or five cities.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of work. I think my last question for you, and it's around the Immigration Council you talked about earlier on, is like, what's the plan with that? Like, what's the hope? What are you expecting that council to achieve over the next 1 year, 2 years, 5 years? You know, especially with all that we're seeing right now with the country.
Yeah, so like our councils usually have a 1 year term. Oh. And then if there's appetite, then they can get renewed. And, you know, like some of our councils have been working for a number of years. Others only last 1 year because it was a very specific issue. I think in the case of immigration, and again, like just in recognition of the challenging context that we have, right now, I would say the objective is that we have this group of strong business leaders that can even, you know, help the Canadian Chamber of Commerce reshape our own narrative towards immigration, that this council can reset the conversation with government officials, again, going back to the facts and highlighting the benefits, economic benefits of immigration. Yeah. Right now, this council is more about the overall comprehensive view of immigration. It's not about specific issues. It's not just about international students. It's not just about temporary foreign workers.
Yeah.
It has to be about everything. Yeah. And so that's. I don't know. You know, perhaps this council will want to launch some kind of public education campaign, organizing events. I think we need to have more in-depth discussions and really, really look at the numbers and what the numbers are telling us. Because I feel that often, you know, the international student piece and suddenly it gets demonized, or the temporary foreign worker program. I'm not saying any of those programs are perfect. But like some of the things that I have seen on the media, I just go like, oh my gosh, like this is not a balanced perspective.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The youth unemployment piece, like right now, it's very frustrating. What we have found with our own data, our own analysis of the data, is that, you know, of course, youth unemployment doesn't look the same across the country.
Yeah.
That in general, young people, so that's 15 to 24, so that's actually two different groups, like 15 to 18, 19 to 24, are not going for the same jobs as temporary foreign workers that came under the temporary foreign worker program. We know that there's like so much to the youth unemployment piece, like, you know, AI and many entry-level jobs disappearing. Yeah. The trade uncertainty, and many businesses actually just being kind of like cautious and not hiring. So again, I would just highlight that we, if we are tempted to go for simplistic answers narrative and explanations,
we should
stop and think, because none of these issues are easy, and they don't deserve simple answers.
Yeah. Like that simplistic narrative is just the one that tires me out. It's just like, you know, which is why I like enjoy doing this, because then you get to talk with different people and get different parts of the conversation. We just feel like every single time we just basically simplify it. Like we just said, what's the easiest thing to say? And we just say that. And then the media being the media, they basically just run with that, you know. But yeah, thank you so much, Diana. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lucy. I love chatting with you.
Like, thank you. Honestly, this was really good. That was a good one, honestly. And I do find what she says about the Immigration Council pretty interesting. I mean, I do wish that they were gonna do more. But I guess it's a function of the time and the plans that they have. But we'll see. Because she's right. We do need to work on the public narrative. We do. Because if we don't get that, if we don't fix that, I don't think anything's going to come. It's going to happen as we want it to happen. But yeah, as always, please, if you know someone who finds this useful, please send to them. If you know someone who should listen to this or one who I should interview, please send them my way. When Substack, YouTube, anywhere you get your podcast, you can find it. Just type the Newcomers Podcast. Enjoy.